Let's get physical. Physical. Hey there. Welcome to Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com and hosted by, yep, you guessed it, Amelia Dalton. So we're not diving into the depths of the extensive Olivia Newton-John songbook, although that would be kind of fun. No, we're talking about a different kind of physical this week, physical design. So rest assured, no leotards will be hurt in this episode. My guest is David Stratman from Cadence Design Systems, and we're getting into some serious physical design details this week. Let's go. Hey, Dave, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, so let's talk about physical design. Now, at what point in the design of a chip does physical design actually begin?
Yeah, that probably depends on kind of who you ask and when you ask them, frankly.
Right.
If you look back at my career, I think the definition has actually changed quite a bit. Further beyond my career, really, where digital design and circuit design, frankly, started, it was all a manual process. It was like artwork. You're drawing things down in a layout. And as we started to develop tools to do things like, you know, repeat patterns and check for design rules, we started to get maybe more of a delineation. And I think the big tipping point in the industry was when we introduced hardware description languages and started actual logical synthesis and mapping into cell libraries. That's when we saw maybe a definition of what logical design is versus physical design.
Mm-hmm.
With logical design being kind of the work that led up to getting a functional working netlist, logical netlist in place before we started the process of physically implementing those transistors, cells, wires on the die itself. And so if you use that definition for physical design, it's kind of that starting point at floor planning, partitioning, placement, clock tree synthesis, and kind of final routing before you do some sign-off steps of the flow itself. So that's what I think, you know, most people would answer.
Yeah.
But even since then, I've seen it changing. I did a good decade of digital design work at Sun Microsystems. And when I started, we were kind of in that boat of having a very clear definition of the front-end guys, which was my job to, you know, define your microarchitecture, write your RTL, do an initial synthesis, make sure it met timing, and then really threw it over a wall.
Yeah.
In which case, the physical designers had the job of actually meeting, you know, real physical timing with true wires, routing. And then they often, you know, had to send that back to change the RTL or change the design to meet those timing. But it was really two different disconnected worlds. And at that time, the tools themselves were really, I would say, interchangeable and really kind of point tool focused.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the EDA vendors and kind of would swap in and out at any stage of the flow. But over time, since then, you know, as the process nodes have shrunk, we've been able to fit more and more on a chip. And the physical nature of the wires versus the cells, the delays are most strongest in the smallest nodes in the wires. And so what that means is that we need to start considering those effects during the logical stage. So I think in today's world, in the last 5-10 years, even more so, that definition has grayed a bit. So we don't have as clear of a line. And if you would ask, you know, your typical logical engineer, they have to consider those physical effects. And EDA vendors have to start thinking about, you know, how they can address those, both earlier and later in the flow. So it's changed, and it's really evolving almost back to the whole flow needs to be physically aware at this point.
So how do you think EDA vendors are changing what they're offering to support this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I can definitely talk to it from Cadence perspective, but industry-wide, I would say that what I outlined there, this nice, clean front-end flow that flows into a back-end flow, and all these clear steps that happen in a linear fashion, that's not reality.
Right.
In reality, multiple things are happening in parallel, and there are a ton of iterations.
Mm.
This concept of design closure is around because you can't do it in one pass. You have
to
make a lot of passes. And so as part of that, what I think you're seeing in the industry, and certainly what Cadence is investing is integrated flows where we're moving away from these point tool-based approaches to really kind of single vendor systems where we share a lot of the core components. So for example, at Cadence, we took a look 2 or 3 years back and actually re-architected our core software and our digital tool chain. And what we've done is shared a lot of common engines and algorithms across the steps of the digital flow.
Okay.
And it's enabled us to be much more predictive early in the flow to what some of the downstream effects are. A couple examples of what we do is we now share the placer and the router between the synthesis tool and the implementation tool.
Sure.
We also have all of the sign-off engines, whether they're for power or timing or physical sign-off itself, available within the implementation tool. It's called InDesign sign-off, and Cadence was kind of pioneer in that space. That's a bet we've made and we'll continue to make, and we think it's critical in order to deliver convergent design flow at the most advanced nodes today.
Okay, Dave, so what kind of specific market segments are you talking about that physical awareness is more critical than others?
Well, the purely, you know, physical design steps that I outline, you know, those are applicable to really all market verticals. We definitely see, though, as you move more towards advanced node, anyone doing advanced application processors from ARM or others, we're seeing those concepts of InDesign sign-off where you're taking all of the kind of advanced physical checks you do typically at the back end, very last stages of the flow, making those available during implementation. That's something almost all of our customers are leveraging. And then from a logical perspective, it's that trend of pushing physicality up into synthesis and the application areas of networking and kind of GPU design where there's heavy interconnect inside of design. Those are the ones that are probably most beneficial for moving to a physical synthesis flow. Mm-hmm. And if you have the combination of a heavily connected design at an advanced node, it's almost a requirement at this point. So more and more our customers are moving to that and using it as the default in their flow.
Okay, so does the concept of physical awareness apply beyond the typical design construct, perhaps at the system level? And does it ever get to a point where the end customer would care?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly talk to it in front of customers from a digital flow perspective. But if you look at a piece of the flow that we would consider maybe in the system space at high level synthesis, where you're instead of using RTL, you're at a C or system C level model.
Sure.
Even that's become physical aware in the last few years. We have some customer papers out of Japan. We've done some really nice work showing how considering physical effects, even at that early stage as you translate from a C level down into RTL into real gates, is beneficial to the end customer. That's one area, but at a system level from Cadence and in the broader market, you know, you asked about the consumer, I would say the products themselves and the end markets are kind of what's driving maybe a slightly different definition of what physicality is or can be.
Uh-huh.
So you look at the product itself, how small it is, how hot it gets, how much power it needs, how much battery.
Sure.
The semiconductor devices in these smartphones or even in your autonomous car or drones often dictate kind of the form factor of these products and the physical nature of how they look, how they sell, how cool they are.
Sure.
So I would say, you know, we contribute to that physicality for a consumer, but maybe an even broader definition of physicality is the environment around that user, kind of what they're interacting with. And there's a ton of interesting stuff going on in the market around, you know, computer vision, augmented reality, virtual reality, artificial intelligence, where, you know, the user itself and all the devices they're leveraging are interacting with their surroundings much more aggressively. And that's hugely compute intensive. And so the semiconductor devices that go into that are critical to develop those new markets. And I think, you know, Cadence is at the forefront of really pushing innovation in that space, both within the tools we use to develop the digital chips that go inside those devices, but also in some of the IP we're developing and, you know, Tensilica Vision processors, et cetera. It's an area we see as a growth driver and something we're investing heavily in.
Do you see more or less physicality in the future of chip design for us engineers?
Yeah, I guess, you know, part of me from Cadence says that our job is to really put all that complexity of physical design and kind of hide it and automate it for the user. And so while our goal is probably to limit that exposure, you know, I do see in reality engineers needing to understand more of the flow, module engineers to understand what their design's impact will be during the physical stages downstream, and physical designers and sign-off engineers to understand how they can partner with the architecture logical designs themselves to make sure they're implementable and manufacturable, because that's our end goal. I think that the trend towards expanding knowledge from the logical to physical space and growing the number of tools that a user can interact with is actually a good thing for these engineers as they develop a, you know, a more powerful asset in their careers.
Sure. All right, Dave, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Let's talk about snowboarding.
Snowboarding,
what
okay.
What got you into snowboarding, and where's the best place in the whole world that you've gone snowboarding?
Well, obviously, the physicality of it. I've been all over. I live in Northern California, so do a lot of snowboarding in Tahoe.
Sure.
Been to Whistler, been to parts of the Alps. Probably some heliskiing in Whistler is some
wow.
of the coolest stuff I've done.
Fun. And that didn't scare
maybe
the
that's
wits
in,
out
in
of
my,
you?
In my past, in my younger years. But no, it definitely did. And you need some friends who are maybe better than you to push you to do stuff like that. But
right.
You know, it's always fun to try new things. So.
Awesome.
Give it a shot next time you're there.
No. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Dave.
All right. My pleasure.
Speaking of chip design, let's get small. Really small. Smaller than small. 3 nanometers small. Oh, yes, you heard me right. That's a big 3 nanometer. It was just announced this week that Cadence Design Systems, with a little help from iMEC, have rolled out the world's first 3-nanometer test chip. Now, I am just baffled. It's funny, when I started in this business about 15 years ago, the idea of a 3-nanometer chip was kind of funny. Ha ha, can't imagine we're ever going to get that small. Well, folks, we have. Okay, so how did we get to the tiny of tiniest here? Carefully, and with a little help of extreme ultraviolet or EUV and 193 immersion lithography-oriented design rules. So Cadence's Innovus implementation system and Genus synthesis solution also played a big part in the creation of this test chip. And on the iMEC side, they used a 64-bit CPU with a custom 3-nanometer standard cell library with a trim metal flow. Now, they were able to get the routing pitch reduced to 21 nanometers. Okay, so the real winner of this announcement, I believe, at least, isn't the size of the chip, but that is super cool. It's the interconnects. This announcement represents a big advancement in interconnect technology because, as you can probably imagine, when you get down to such a small node, interconnect variation will be a big deal. An Stegen, Executive Vice President of the Semiconductor Technology and Systems at iMEC, puts it quite succinctly. He says, "Our work on the test chip has enabled interconnect variation to be measured and improved, and the 3-nanometer manufacturing process to be validated." Awesome. So no, we're not going to see 3-nanometer chips in our mobile devices anytime soon, but the possibilities of this announcement in the semiconductor industry could be huge. How does that saying go? If you build it, the designs will come. Wait, something like that. If you want further information about this 3-nanometer test chip rolled out by iMEC and Cadence, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com. So, hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And, you know, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. Guys, it is brimming with all sorts of awesome techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of March 2nd, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.